Isn't this a sports show?
Being like a sports talk radio show host used to be what I wanted to do with my life. It used to be very exciting to me.
Almost entirely.
I want to yell at little kids. I want to tell little kids that they suck.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
You suck. You're adopted. Your mom's too hot for your dad. She's going to leave him soon. Get ready for it. Who do you like spending your weekends with better, your mom or your dad?
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
This is a template on how to lose your show before Alex Hicks loses his job.
We got time.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
Is there a word that means both love and hate in some language?
I that the show.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome in, welcome in. It's a Friday. Not really, kind of a red Friday, I guess. I guess every Friday during football season is a red Friday. But not the reddest possible Friday, because the Chiefs don't play until Monday, which is kind of exciting. Monday Night Football, waiting on that. But we here at Almost Entirely Sports today are the usual Friday setup, Almost Entirely Chiefs. We have a lot of stuff to get to today. I want to continue the Alex Smith conversation from yesterday because, like gold falling out of the clouds, there's an ESPN story up today, a column even by Kevin Seifert about Alex Smith changing his approach. We'll talk about that a little bit later on here. And then, of course, look at this matchup between Kansas City and Washington at home on Monday Night Football. We'll look at the advantages that the Chiefs have and the disadvantages that they're going to have to deal with. At the very front end, though, I want to do a couple pieces of housekeeping, some stuff you may or may not care about, but I'm going to put it out there so you are aware. I've got a really busy weekend coming, which is kind of strange, kind of a weirdly busy weekend, doing lots of really interesting and good things over on our sister station, Sports Radio 810, from noon to 1 on Saturday, which is for me tomorrow, if you're listening to this podcast, maybe today. But from noon to 1 on Saturday, I'll be on Sports Radio 810 live from Lawrence, out waiting for the beginning, officially, I think you could say, of Kansas basketball season. So we'll be doing a show out live from Lawrence, waiting for late night. And apparently after we do the show, Charlie, Carl, and I will be out there. And you can come say hi. Come say hi. Well, go ahead, Beards. Go ahead.
And of course, I live in Lawrence and I won't be there.
That's your first Saturday off in how long?
Ever.
Enjoy that.
I know.
Just take it.
It'll be great.
Just sleep in.
I mean, I'll do that anyway.
I'll be out there, though, with the 810 Cruiser from, I believe, 9 to 3 out around Allen Fieldhouse. So come say hi if you're out there. Well, we can listen. I mean, it's going to be a KU day, but if you come out and you want to talk Chiefs, I will be there to talk whatever you want to talk about. So that is Saturday out live from Lawrence. 9 to 11 a.m. on Sunday is Sports Sunday over on Sports Radio 810. We'll be talking about all of the NFL action coming up later on Sunday. And then, of course, we'll do more sort of Chiefs discussion, not necessarily pregame. But then from 4 to 6 a.m. on Monday, we're going to be doing a sort of like a Chiefs AM pregame. I at 4 a.m. will begin 810's day of Chiefs talk.
And I won't be here.
That's fine.
Thank God.
That's fine. And so we're going to have 2 hours there of purely Chiefs and NFL conversations as we kick off the station's coverage that day. We'll take you all the way up to Monday Night Football. Are we playing Monday Night Football here? No, okay. Never mind. But we'll get you all the way up until the kickoff, and I'll start you there at 4 a.m. So if you're out and about, if you're getting home or heading out, regardless, I'll be there from 4 to 6 a.m. Also, this show, I know it's a lot of housekeeping. I know, and I'm sorry, but this is important.
We're actually popular now. We have to do things.
This show has a thing.
We have a thing?
On Wednesday, this upcoming Wednesday, we are going to be out at Pegas. And I would explain it to you, but I cut a promo for it earlier today.
But you're going
to
explain it with your own voice just recorded.
Yeah, so here's a tight 30 seconds explaining what's going on.
Hey, what are you doing this Wednesday? Change your plans. I have a better idea. This is Joshua Briscoe from ESPN Kansas City. Stop by Pega's American Restaurant this Wednesday as I broadcast my show live. Come to Pega's on the corner of Shawnee Mission Parkway and Antioch. I'll be there from 4 to 6 this Wednesday. Enjoy some incredible homemade food in the company of ESPN Kansas City. Just like in college basketball, we have free stuff to give you, but when you take our free stuff, the FBI won't come knocking at your door. Come join ESPN Kansas City at Pega's American Restaurant this Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. Right there, boom. I mean, I freaking nailed it. Nailed the launch, nailed the landing. I have nothing to apologize for. Unfortunately, Beards will be here at the station still running everything. You can come say hi to me and also Charlie.
It'll be a Wet and Wild Wednesday.
It'll be a Wet and Wild Wednesday with Warley Warlin out there on Wednesday out at Pegas. Again,
do we need to get that trademarked, by the way?
I don't think anyone else needs it or wants it. That's Pegas out at China Mission Parkway in Antioch. The more people that show up out there, the more people will actually believe that this show like can be sold, and that like advertisers should want us to be at places.
And the more food we'll have in our bellies.
Yeah, and also the more food we'll have in our wallet in the form of money, hopefully, eventually. I don't know. But if you are in the area, if you're anywhere near China Mission Parkway in Antioch, and that Pegas, come by 4 to 6 on Wednesday. Come say hi, and then go over and order some food, some delicious home-cooked style food. And whenever you go there, say, hello, I'd like some of your delicious food. Also, I'm here because of Almost Entirely Sports and ESPN Kansas City. You should be a devoted sponsor of that show.
We need like little button pins, like the I voted ones or whatever. It's like, yes. I'm here because of ESPN Kansas City.
I'm writing this down. I'm writing down right now, Almost Entirely Sports buttons.
So we need like two of those?
You and me. I think we need at least like a dozen, so then we both have one, and then we can both just sort of like throw five in the air each.
Oh, okay.
And then we pick them up and throw them again and just keep doing that until
we
lose them
all. It's just
a cycle.
It's a never-ending cycle.
Yeah, just until we lose them all. It's like the water cycle, but for pens. So that's what's happening this week. A very busy weekend and then a busy week coming up for me and for this show. And you can come say hi out of Lawrence on Saturday from between 9 and 3, but I'll be on air from noon to 1. And you can come say hi at Pegas. Antioch and China Mission Parkway on Wednesday from 4 to 6. We'll be doing this show. So, very exciting things there. Today, we're going to have Seth Kizer on at 4:30, so about 20 minutes from now. We'll talk to Seth about everything going on with the Kansas City Chiefs. There's so many things going on. Also, just for the record, so you have a feeling for where my headspace currently is, all of that stuff I just told you about, I just found that we just got like knocked in like right before this show started. We sort of finalized all that. So I feel the weight right now, man. And poor Beards is here finishing his first like 5-day run with me. Beards and I, we've worked together several times in several different ways for several different things. This is the first time we've ever worked together in five consecutive shows.
It's rough.
How's it been?
It's rough.
Is that all you have? It's rough?
Let's see. I'm not wearing jorts yet, so I think I'm resisting the corruption so far.
It usually takes a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great work. Great Thanks. Work for me, Beards.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, before we talk to Seth here, I want to talk about this story from NFL Nation today on ESPN.com from Kevin Seifert. The headline is a real continuation of what we're talking about yesterday. Think Alex Smith has changed his approach? Not so fast. I'll read you the intro and then the takeaway. All the storylines fit when you look at the raw numbers. Alex Smith is having the best start to his career and one of the best 3 weeks in the NFL after the Kansas City Chiefs began the process of replacing him. With first-round draft pick Patrick Mahomes sitting on the bench, Smith has transformed into an aggressive gunslinger that no one thought he wanted to be. One caveat, he hasn't. And then so he goes through and he points out a lot of things that we as Chiefs fans know, that he's second in the NFL in touchdowns, that he's tied for best in interceptions, first in touchdown throws of over 20 yards, first in completion percentage, first in touchdown percentage. Fantastic things here, and something that Seifert says, without a doubt, the Chiefs' passing offense has put up some big numbers. That's obviously true, but he does say passing offense. Yesterday we talked about Adam Teicher's assessment of this whole thing. He said the quarterback rating is a more accurate judgment of where Smith is than QBR. Seifert says, and I quote, in this case, QBR paints a more complete picture of Smith's season. Smith has the best passer rating in the NFL, in case you forgot that yesterday. And he is 16th in QBR in the NFL. Again, Teicher said quarterback rating paints the more accurate picture. Seifert says the QBR paints the more complete picture of Smith's season. he goes through and talks about the pass catchers and the conservative throws turning into bigger chunks of yardage. The Chiefs averaged the NFL's highest yardage total after the catch per completion and had not dropped a single pass through the first 3 weeks of the season based on ESPN stats and information video analysis. That's amazing. Last year, the Chiefs dropped a higher percentage of passes, 5%, more than all but six teams, one of the worst in the league at dropped passes. This year, the Chiefs are catching everything and turning it into big chunks of yardage. But Smith, he says, on the other hand, an average Smith pass is traveling 5.81 yards in the air past the line of scrimmage, lower than 26 other NFL quarterbacks. That's even less than the 6.24 air yards per throw he averaged since joining the Chiefs in 2013, the lowest among qualified quarterbacks over that span. And he talks about then the sack rate we talked about a little bit yesterday. Here are the Chiefs' NFL ranked advanced stats here. They're first in yards after the catch per completion. They're tied for 28th in first downs on third downs. They're tied for first best in drops with zero. The offense is 32nd in sack percentage with 12% per dropback. Seifert says, indeed, the Chiefs' success hasn't been the result of a new Alex Smith. Pay attention here. If anything, it's Alex Smith turned up to 11. As the next graphic shows, I will tell you about the next graphic. More than one out of every three passes Smith has thrown this season didn't make it past the line of scrimmage. These are the highest percentage throws in football. They are the easiest to complete, most difficult to force a turnover on, and the type of pass that puts the maximum responsibility on the receiver to make it a positive gain. And by the way, the first place quarterback in the league for attempts at or behind the line of scrimmage is Alex Smith. Second is Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers perpetually misused by Mike McCarthy. This is nothing new for Smith, Seifert writes. Since 2013, he's led the NFL in percentage of throws at or behind the line of scrimmage with 28.2%. As a result, it should not be surprising that Smith had thrown the NFL's fewest passes by percentage that travel more than 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, and it's not even close. About 37% of his throws are extending beyond that 5 yard mark. The next lowest percentage was produced by the Oakland Raiders' Derek Carr, 43%, and the NFL average is 56%. None of this takes away from the net result of the Chiefs' performance. These numbers simply give us a better understanding of how this happened, who else deserves the credit, and the extent to which Smith has remained consistent to his career approach. That's the important stuff from Kevin Seifert's article on ESPN.com today. This is the counterpoint to the Adam Teicher thing we read yesterday. And I think this paints a very fair picture. The Chiefs' passing game, and this is something I've been saying since either of these stories came out, the Chiefs' passing game is having a fantastic start to the year, but it is largely a result of Alex Smith having weapons around him that are elevating his game. He's throwing very few balls beyond 5 yards. He's throwing a ton at or behind the line of scrimmage, and these guys that are getting the ball from those transactions are turning it into big, successful plays. This is not to disparage the passing offense. It's to understand it. That's what I'm looking for here. I'm not looking to criticize or praise necessarily. I don't really think that's a good... I don't think that's a very good philosophy for sports radio. That's not really what I do. In fact, somebody tweeted me last night or this morning saying, like, hey, enjoy the podcast. It's nice to hear you trash the team that's currently 3-0. Listen, man, I'm not here to tell you the Chiefs are 3-0. You know that already. You know the Chiefs are 3-0. You know the offense has put up points. You know the defense has looked good. You know that. I'm not here to go rah-rah 3-0 Chiefs, just like I'm not here to say if they were 0-3 to go bleep bleep 0-3 Chiefs. I want to understand what's happening, and I also want to be able to have as much of an educated guess as possible to go get the predictions for what's happening next. I want to understand what's going on now so we can learn what's coming next and be as educated in that as possible. That's the whole thing right now. My entire goal is
an elevated understanding. I think the Chiefs can win a lot of games with this offense. I think they can even win a few playoff games with this offense. Can they win a Super Bowl? Maybe. They did just fine against the Patriots in week one. With all that out there, we're seeing a lot of the same Chiefs. We're seeing a lot of things that we were expecting earlier on in the season. And then the Patriots game happens, and all of a sudden Twitter lights up with, "Oh, you didn't believe in Alex Smith!" And then I would say, well, yeah, obviously. I'm using the most educated guesses that we can build together. That's the whole point. Like honestly, that's just what we do. That's how I want to do radio. I want to have fun with radio. I want to make fun of the stuff that we need to make fun of. And whenever we're serious about things, I want to understand it all as well as we can. Understanding is what I'm looking for. I don't think that's too much to ask for. And so now, as we look to understand Alex Smith, I think we're seeing largely the same quarterback. A little more risky because of Patrick Mahomes? Maybe. He was way more risky in week one. He was slightly riskier in week two. And in week three, he was as conservative as he's ever been in his NFL career in Kansas City. I think it actually was an entire career. I don't know how you can look at that and say, oh, I'm looking at this and taking away that these small examples are largely, surely, the real Alex Smith. I think in all likelihood, the real Alex Smith isn't the guy that we've seen over and over and over again, including last week. As always, by the way, if you're listening now, you can call the show at 913-491-8255, 913-491-8255. Or the easiest possible thing for you to do is comment on the Facebook live stream. We're on Facebook Live at facebook.com/ESPN Kansas City, or you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. Like so far today, the Facebook comments have been, I would say, litty. My dad commented and said that you heard the intro and said that I am horrible. If you missed the original story for that intro was what the clown guy at the Renaissance Festival was saying to convince people to throw tomatoes at his face. To pay to throw tomatoes at his face. And I want his job. I want that job. That's all. That's currently the extent of the Facebook comments from today. So feel free to chime in with an Alex Smith take.
They've been on fire.
They've been on fire.
And accurate.
Also true. I think it makes so much logical sense to look at all this and go, oh man, at the very least, like, I'm optimistic about a more risk-taking Alex Smith, but I'm conservatively optimistic. Like, I'm optimistic, but I need some more evidence that this is an actual thing that actually exists, that's actually real, and I just don't see it. We haven't seen it yet. It's impossible to see that. I would have said this before the season if we would have gotten to this sort of conversation. I don't think we ever really did. But I think I could have said, listen, there is literally nothing that Alex Smith can show me in the first 5 weeks of the season that is going to fundamentally change what I believe about Alex Smith. Which is not me being stubborn or evidence averse. It's me saying that you're not going to be able to give me enough of a sample size in the first five games, especially in the first single game, to make me believe that what I've seen in those five games is more evident, more real than what we saw over the last 3 years. It's baffling to me. Again, I think one of the most insightful things that anybody said after the Patriots game was when Nick Jacobs tweeted that that Alex Smith had the best offensive line play that he had seen in Kansas City since the Colts playoff game. Which is, the Patriots game and the Colts playoff game are probably the two best games I've ever seen Alex Smith play in Kansas City. whenever he has time, whenever he has no apparent fear of getting knocked around, he's a much better quarterback, obviously. He also has a very, very high completion percentage whenever he's being blitzed, which makes sense. I would love to see, I don't know where to find these stats right now. I'll try to find them maybe for Sports Sunday or whatever, or the Monday morning show. But I'm having a pretty clear guess about what's like the average yards per attempt whenever he's being blitzed. And that's fine. The Chiefs put together, and this is the important thing, yards in the air. Because the Chiefs run lots of blitzbuster plays, and I'm guessing that the yards per attempt are very high, actually, against the blitz. Because whenever you are being blitzed to death, you dump the ball over to Tyreek Hill, who is suddenly in space because a bunch of those linebackers have cleared out to try to get to Alex Smith. You're in really good shape as a quarterback whenever you're dumping the ball to the fastest guy on the planet playing this sport, and he's got nobody around him because they all went for Alex Smith. That might be whenever this offense is the best. But that's the problem. That's when the offense is the best. Again, this is not some sort of new indictment on Alex Smith. It's simply something we've seen over and over again. So you shouldn't be surprised by it. You shouldn't be hurt by this conversation. It's just the Alex Smith that we've seen. And I think you can look at it different ways. I respect Adam Teicher very much, who said that he thinks the QBR is very unfair to Alex Smith. And I respect Kevin Seifert and the way that he analyzed all of it. It is the pesky thing about all of this, is it's all a little bit subjective. But the things that would have to fundamentally change for Alex Smith haven't fundamentally changed. You can have the conversation is, well, is this offense as a whole, is this offense good enough to win a Super Bowl / playoff games, etc.? And that becomes, I think, an arguable conversation. But if it is, it's not because of Alex Smith. And that's something that, again, I was saying during the preseason. Saying that if Alex Smith uses Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and now Kareem Hunt well enough, the offense can be completely revolutionized. I've been saying that very consistently for a while now. But after week one and into week two, and then after the first touchdown, after the touchdown to Tyreek Hill in week three, and then never again after that, the conversation became, ooh, well, excuse me, it sounds like Alex Smith is revolutionizing this offense. He's not. He's playing this offense as Alex Smith would be expected to play this offense. The results are better because his talent around him is better, at least in three spots. And that counts. Those points count. That's good. But eventually, I think we get sucked into that same conversation that we always have whenever we're saying, well, the offense is good and has playmakers, and that wins you lots of regular season games. But what about the playoffs? And then we're back to where we were this whole offseason. And I expected to be here. I expected to be having this conversation, and it's okay. Because we'll know about the playoffs whenever we get there. But I'm just not hugely filled with confidence because we're getting a more productive overall offense. It's helpful. It's good. I'm happy about it. The offense as a whole looks better than it did last year. But Alex Smith looks almost exactly the same. Seth Kyler, whoop. Oh, man, I had such a good throw to the break. Let's rewind that. Zoom, 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 zoom. Seth Kyler, when we come back.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Sean Smith is arrested for felony assault for beating his sister's boyfriend.
With Joshua Briscoe.
And men across America go, oh.
Yeah!
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to the show. Out on the Facebook live stream, RJ said, week three, Alex Smith is a one and done in the playoffs. Week two, Alex Smith is in the AFC Championship. And then week one, Alex Smith is a Super Bowl appearance. Maybe you win it. I think that's reasonably fair. The problem is, which is the real Alex Smith? You've got door number one, door number two, and door number three. But I have a little bit of a hard time discerning still why you would believe that week one Alex Smith, a guy you've seen exactly twice in a Chiefs uniform, is a real character and isn't like Tyler Durden. We now go to the man who's going to hopefully answer these questions for us, Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride. He's at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. Seth, did you get my Fight Club reference?
The first thing I was going to say was that was a great Fight Club reference.
Yeah! All right. Sometimes I will reference Fight Club, and then people will just, like, respond with a blank stare, and it's really hard. Like, Beards, did you get what I was doing? Okay, Beards also got it, which shocked me. Sometimes people just don't get it, and it makes me so sad because I love that movie so much.
Well, you have to understand, Josh, you're still quite young, but you're getting older.
It's true.
And it's going to happen more and more.
I'm
only 32, and I have it happen to me sometimes.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I can see it coming. It's not great. that's just such a good movie and such a good reference to make. Anyway, we were talking about Alex Smith in this first segment here. Yesterday, we talked about Adam Teicher's article about why he thinks that he's closer to the best quarterback than the 16th quarterback, which is obviously Alex Smith has the best quarterback rating in football, but the 16th QBR. And then Kevin Seifert on ESPN.com this morning had an article come out that was making the exact inverse argument. So I guess the first thing I want to know from you, we also looked at your story on Alex Smith's week 3 snaps and how
yep.
how you sort of broke all that down with what you've seen from Alex Smith this year and the sample size of years past. What Alex Smith this year have we seen? Of the Alex Smiths we've seen this year, I guess I should say, which one is the mm-hmm. realist?
You know, one thing I would take issue with is the idea that Alex Smith in week 2 was necessarily worse than Alex Smith in week 1. What I view as different when I did my all 22 of them was the situation around him.
Mm-hmm.
The team itself performed at near perfection levels mm-hmm. against New England.
Right.
And, I mean, the pass blocking was unbelievable. And what I would postulate is that what you saw from Alex, although it was statistically quite a bit inferior, and you saw a few more plays that made you go, wait a minute,
mm-hmm.
I would say under significantly tougher circumstances, he didn't play that much worse. He did what he could, and he actually had to make some plays, as opposed to against New England, where a lot of those plays were kind of handed to him. Now, to be fair, it was still a great performance,
right?
And he took advantage of every opportunity. But I would say against the Eagles, some of the plays he made down the stretch, I mean, the play that really buried the Eagles was that deep ball to Conley, and that was a brilliant pass. Certain things that happened in that game, you know, the 3rd-and-4 conversion where he escaped, I don't know how he escaped it, a sure sack to gain the first down. He actually made plays against the Eagles. As far as the real Alex Smith goes, one thing, even against the Chargers, he still stuck a deep ball.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a low bar that we're setting.
Yeah.
But I can't. We used to go, how many games in a row do you think you could probably go back to last year?
Yeah.
I'm sure somewhere in my reviews. You could find 4 or 5 games in a row where he didn't hit a single pass over 25 yards.
Sure.
Or even attempt one.
Right.
And the fact that he's hit one in every single game, even if other things are, you know, not quite what you want, San Diego is getting after him, hitting that one deep ball to Hill, even just doing one a game, one big play, it forces defensive coordinators to think a little bit differently.
It does, and I buy that, but, like, the thing from week 3 that bothered me was to see there were two of those shots. There was a shot to the open Tyreek Hill that ended up being a 30-yard touchdown, and then there was the deep shot down the sideline to a slightly more but not necessarily covered Tyreek Hill that was underthrown and out of bounds. So I don't last week gives me that sour taste in my mouth, I guess.
Right, and that's, you know, one thing it's important to remember is the more, you know, when you see someone taking a deep shot, no quarterback hits the majority of those.
Sure.
Now, if Alex can continue, because what he's done this year that's different is he's hitting on over half of the deep shots that he's taking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if that's sustainable because very quarterbacks don't do that.
Right.
And they're not taking more shots. That's kind of a fallacy that I've heard people passing around. Oh, they're taking more deep shots. They're really not. If you chart the snaps, they're succeeding on more deep shots.
Right.
And if he continues to be that efficient on deep shots, well, fair enough.
Right.
That I can live with. Although, again, the whole offense, besides Kareem Hunt, looked very stagnant and very 2016 very. Against the Chargers.
And there were a couple of plays. Brian Baldinger was doing some good film breakdown stuff, and he charted out that play. It ended up being a check down to DeAnthony Thomas. And
right.
Chris Conley was open down the sideline. It would have probably been a touchdown. But Alex Smith also had the time to get it there. This was not one of those plays where the pressure was a problem. He looked in that direction and ultimately checked it down to a, in fairness, very, very open DeAnthony Thomas. But those are the plays that drive me crazy, because say they're not taking more deep shots, taking more efficient ones, and I'm into that. But you're so limiting yourself whenever you have these opportunities and you don't take them. Those are the things to me that I wish there was a stat for that could help me understand what the problem is. Because, guys, you talked about the higher completion percentage on these deep shots. That's something that I think it's attributed to guys getting even more open than they did last year, having more faith in Tyreek Hill this year. Seeing Alex Smith ever pass those up it keeps me awake at night.
Oh, absolutely. I know exactly what play you're talking about. You know, I had some people who maybe don't always handle Alex Smith being criticized super well tell me that I was being overly critical there.
Yeah.
I've been getting in a lot of trouble with people lately, and I feel bad. Me too. I thought two glowing reviews of him would be enough to shield me, but it wasn't.
No kidding.
The thing what I noticed on that play was he hitched his feet. As though he was about to throw, and he just couldn't bring himself to do it, and he checked it down to Thomas. Now, again, I believe it was first down. Thomas was open, and Thomas had only one man to really beat, and he did beat him. I think it was a 15-yard gain.
Yeah.
And I get it. I get all of it. But I think with most quarterbacks, and here's where the problem for Alex exists, really. With most quarterbacks, I think fans would be okay with that kind of decision. There are some quarterbacks that fans wish they would make decisions like that.
Right.
But because of Alex's history, if you want to call it that, it makes us get jittery.
Yep.
It makes us get a little bit nervous, thinking, man, why didn't you take the shot, bud?
Yep.
And so we'll see. I personally, I've been on the record. I think Alex is going to play pretty well Monday night, and we're all going to be celebrating. So. Mm-hmm.
I would be hopeful of that. Let's go ahead and talk about that then. The Washington has a really talented pass rush, and over these last few weeks, we've seen as the offensive line has performed with more and more holes in it, Alex Smith has gotten more and more conservative. That's something that has statistically panned out. He had 57. This is the percentage of passes thrown 5 or fewer yards downfield. Week 1, just 57%. Week 2, 64%. Week 3, 86%. The highest percentage in his career. And I think
week 3 was unusual.
Yes. Alex Smith was unusually conservative last week.
He absolutely was.
Which is like an amazing thing to say. But with that out there, I think you can at least correlate, if not, you know, have the causation, but you can correlate that with a declining offensive line play. If Washington gets pressure on Alex Smith, I'm pretty nervous about the idea that he's going to continue to be that kind of conservative this week, too.
And I think there's definitely some cause for that concern. Washington does have a good pass rush. I would say, now here's the deal. They're coming off a game where they whooped Oakland, who has a widely acknowledged good offensive line.
Yep.
But if you watch them against the Eagles or the Rams, while their defense looks decent, it doesn't look like some kind of terrorizing force. I've got a couple of Raiders analysts that I really respect, and their view of that game, now to be fair, you know, they're Raiders fans as well, but their view of that game was that it was a lot more of a case of Oakland's line playing unusually bad. Like everyone across the board except maybe Penn. And so I'm curious whether that really was a case where the Redskins' pass rush is that good and it's finally just turned on against Oakland, or if it was just a case where they caught Oakland on one of their stinkers of a game that we as Chiefs fans know they have.
Sure.
I'm so stringent in my belief that Oakland's a paper tiger that it's really affecting my view of that Washington win. Now, I'm not saying they don't have talent. They do. But I look at their other games where the Eagles really had no trouble beating them handily. And they barely beat a Rams team that no one really knows what to think of them. I'm not sure if I see it. Now, hopefully I'm not proven horribly wrong on Monday, because I'm going to be there. So.
Right. Okay, you're going out to the game on Monday?
I am
actually
going to be at the game on Monday. I'm excited. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I imagine the atmosphere will be decent. I would think that there will be sounds being made by the crowd. I would assume that there will be beverages consumed by a crowd. I would assume there will be a football game played. I feel like that could turn out okay. Let's talk about non-Alex Smith things here, but specifically with the weapons around him. Last week, Travis Kelce was a non-factor, and he in week one he was relatively limited by the Patriots. It seemed like. What do you think about the way that Kelce's being used in this offense? What have you seen on tape that either gives you some concern, or maybe that makes you go, this isn't a big deal. This is just defensive scheming.
What I saw against the Patriots was defensive scheming. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was interesting, regardless of the type of coverage they were playing, it looked a lot like the playoff game, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where Kelce was and no matter what kind of coverage scheme the Patriots were utilizing, they were bracketing Kelce. I saw a lot of that, again, in week one. And I think Andy knew it was coming, so he made a game plan around Kelce, yes, running routes, but mostly building around the anticipation that they would be bracketing Kelce, and it worked brilliantly.
Yeah.
And then they found a way to get him the ball in creative ways, you know, these shovel passes, which is just such an unbelievable innovation into the read option scheme.
Yes.
So that was week one. You know, what I saw in week three, Kelce was once again, he was out there on some routes. I think it was more of a timing issue. For example, he was going up the seam looking for a touchdown on Tyreek Hill's touchdown, but the safety rolled his way.
Right.
So what they had going on there, they just had a single high safety, and Andy Reid, because he's a sharp guy, he forced that safety to make a choice.
Right.
And at this point, safeties are still going to choose Travis Kelce every time over Tyreek Hill. Now we'll see if that keeps changing. Or if that starts changing, because I think that's more what's happening is defenses are still scheming to take away Travis Kelce. The problem is Tyreek Hill keeps making them pay, or Kareem Hunt keeps making them pay with these, 30, 40, 50-yard touchdowns. So eventually the pendulum's going to swing. I also thought Kelce was a little more part of the run blocking than he was normally. Plus, it was just a weird game. There were like 50 offensive plays. Right. There just wasn't enough, there wasn't as much food to go around as it were.
And then Kareem Hunt is obviously in the middle of an unbelievable start to his career. Again, just in case anybody forgot, he started this career with a fumble against the Super Bowl champions in prime time. And he has been otherworldly.
Otherworldly is the right word.
What have you seen from him that has, like trait-wise? I think we probably covered a lot of this ground before the actual season started, but I want to check in now, three games into this Hall of Fame career, surefire first ballot Hall of Fame career. What have you seen from him that's made all of this happen?
What I have seen from him is a lot of the same stuff that he demonstrated in college, but he's doing it at the pro level just as effectively.
Yeah.
And that's different for a lot of players. You know, a lot of players, you say, okay, if he can do that 90% as well at the pro level, he's going to be good, right?
Mm-hmm.
What he shows at the pro level, for one, his vision has already improved. If you go back to the first couple preseason games, you'll see him breaking to the edge when it's an inside zone run, and that was a couple of holds that occurred during the game. And that's because the tackle, when they see him go outside, they have no choice but to hold. He had a couple holes that he missed. His vision has improved, like, every week. So that's one thing. He's got really good vision. He's an incredibly decisive runner in that when he sees an opening, he just goes. There's no dancing. There's no hesitating. And when you combine those two traits, what I believe we're seeing is that he hits the hole, 0.1 or 0.2 seconds faster than a normal running back. 0.1 or 0.2 seconds in the NFL is a huge deal.
Yeah.
It ruins angles. And so there's that. There's the fact that I think he's a little faster than he was advertised to be. And his balance, as we've seen, his balance and strength that's where it gets into otherworldly.
Yep.
Because he is just, I think what Brian Baldinger said in one of his videos, he said, one question 3 weeks into the NFL season is, can anyone tackle Kareem Hunt? Because so far, no one's been able to.
Yeah.
And he's right. I mean, I'm struggling to remember a single play where he really got wrapped up one-on-one.
Yeah, me too. I don't know if that exists.
And so you combine all those traits. I mean, he's a good receiver. He really is a player without a weakness. and some unique strengths that complement one each other. That burst that he's got, when you combine it with his decisiveness and vision, it means that he is getting past the hole just fast enough to where it's wrecking angles for linebackers. It's wrecking angles for safeties. And when you've got a wrecked angle, it better be a guy you can bring down with an arm tackle. Yeah. Well, guess what? You can't bring down Kareem Hunt with arm tackles. And so his skills are complementary.
Which makes him a cyborg.
Yeah, I thought he would be very good. I'm a big Spencer Ware fan,
mm-hmm,
by the
too.
Way. I think Spencer Ware's a very good running back. I did not think Hunt would be... I was hoping he could replace Ware's production, and I thought he could. Maybe be a little better. He has legitimately looked like the best running back in the NFL through 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even... I don't even know if it's a discussion. Who's second place? Like, it's amazing.
Maybe Dalvin Cook. It's a good rookie class.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, Leonard Fournette is, like, third or fourth place. It's amazing.
Yeah, the return of the running back, because there's a great group coming in next year, too.
We're talking to Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride. He's at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. Also, you can hear him talking with himself, where I don't... It's basically this, but I don't interrupt him. And the Chief in the North podcast, just search it wherever you get your podcasts, and it will show up. Seth, one more thing. Well, now let's go ahead and jump over to the defensive side of the ball, because we don't have a lot of time left here. What are your remaining concerns, and what things so far through these first 3 weeks have left you feeling better than that you expected those places, those units, to make you feel?
With regards to the defense...
On the defensive side, yeah.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the run defense still. Mm-hmm. The defensive line has played very improved ball. Benny Logan's looked really good. Alan Bailey's looked good. Nunez Roches hasn't been as good as he was in the preseason. That's been a bit of a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, you know, Chris Jones is who he is. The defensive line has played really well.
Yes.
But the run defense still isn't quite what I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's nearly as bad as it was down the stretch last year, because despite seeing some frustrating runs, if you really go back and rewatch the game and take emotion out of it, there's a lot of runs where they're bottling guys up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like Melvin Gordon, for example, he had some good runs. But it was only because he broke some tackles and made some legitimately good plays.
Yep.
And so, you know, we'll see where that goes. I'm a little concerned about that. The pass rush, I would be more concerned if it wasn't so clearly part of the game plan to lay back in coverage.
Yeah.
Once they kind of release the hounds, they've been getting after quarterbacks, regardless of the line or the quarterback or the situation.
Yeah, let's.
So there's little concerns there.
Let's talk about that for a second, actually, because that's something that has really just been extremely frustrating to watch, because you know it's largely a choice. Where in the second half, every single week, there's been more Justin Houston than was being used in the first half. How do you feel about how Bob Sutton has been using specifically Justin Houston?
You know, it's hard to argue with four sacks in three games,
mm-hmm.
multiple passes knocked down, multiple mm-hmm. run stuff. But then part of you asks, man, if he does that just rushing, you know, 60% of the time, imagine if you rushed him 90.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating, because you'll see those snaps where even if Houston's rushing, he's only one of three rushers.
Right.
And so they got three guys blocking him. And it doesn't matter who you
no.
are. You can't get through three blockers in the NFL
right.
without some kind of horrible mistake. And so you get frustrated that the results, while Brady was able to move the ball, eventually he crumbled underneath that eight-man in coverage look.
Mm-hmm.
And then down the stretch, they just crushed him.
Yep.
Carson Wentz played arguably better against it, but he basically had to make hero ball play after hero ball play to make anything work. And Phillip Rivers just got hosed. His arm, by the way, I think might be done, but that's a story for another day.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I want to dislike it, but it keeps getting results. My only thing, I would like to see him rush just a little more, especially now with D. Ford apparently not practicing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Ford can, you know, he can get after the passer.
Yep.
So they're going to have to figure something out there.
Agreed. Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride, the Chief of the North podcast, at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter. Is there anything else that people need to know that you do?
I don't sleep, but beyond that,
right, good.
That's all.
you will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important, I guess, also to point out. Seth, go do whatever it is that you do in your free time that is not sleeping, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds great. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Always a pleasure to talk to Seth. All right, whenever we come back, we'll talk more Chiefs, because that's this show.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
If this show is ever, like, I was going to say, like, national, I should have said relevant, I will start a campaign to get you to legally change your name.
Baby steps.
Baby steps, for sure.
With Joshua Briscoe.
First, we have to get paid.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back. We went very, very long with Seth Kizer. Beards was furious. In fact, one of our coworkers walked into the control room as he was trying to get me to go to break, and he just stood up, he took off his headphones, and he punched him right in the face.
That was Chad Boger, too, by the way. So, you know, we might not be here too long. Let's hurry up and get all the stuff in there.
Did someone actually come into the studio at some point?
Yeah, it was Chad.
That's hilarious. I didn't even know that. Great. Chad, the president of the station. So, Beards, you had one full week of being the producer of this show, and
he's
that's
got a
it.
Big old broken nose now.
Great.
Just blood everywhere in here.
In fact, yeah.
Pretty soon, mine will be joining it.
Yeah, no kidding. Your head and your torso in two separate corners of the room will be joining the carnage.
And then you're going to have to run the show by yourself from the board and host the show and run the Facebook Live stuff.
Fantastic.
And take calls.
All right.
On air.
Perfect. Yeah, because we have a lot of calls we have to take here. Beards didn't punch anybody. He was just annoyed that we didn't go to break sooner. I'm sorry. Mitch Morse, D. Ford, Eric Fisher, and Kevin Pierre-Lewis did not practice today for the Chiefs. Parker Anger, Benny Logan, and DeAnthony Thomas all practiced in full. Maybe we're about to see Parker Anger come back and take that left guard spot back from Brian Litzman. There we go. But I have no real way of knowing if he's actually back. I'm nervous about the pass rush this weekend, or I guess Monday, not even this weekend, on the other side of this weekend. I'm nervous about the pass rush because Justin Houston gets dropped back too much. I'd like to see him used more aggressively. No D Ford would be a pretty big setback, and the next guy up is Frank Zombo, and that is it. That's the whole deal. Whenever we come back, we'll talk about a few more Chiefs-related things. Also, I know a bunch of you are sick of it, but we're gonna go to a couple of anthem-related conversations, and not really anthem related. Beards just rolled his eyes. Go to hell, Beards. Not anthem related. In fact, the steps that come after it. I think we're talking about all this really, really poorly now, like on a national scale, and I want to fix some of that. I want to give a minute and a half of this show to what Doug Baldwin said on CNN, and the steps that are being taken that advance where you go from here to try to solve the problems of systematic racial injustice in this country. So we'll spend a little bit of time over there. Not a ton, and maybe we'll even go Chiefs first. We'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. As always, you can see this show on Facebook Live. You can hear us on ESPN Kansas City 99.3 FM, 1510 AM. You can go to 1510.com. Don't go there for the show schedule, though, because it's inaccurate. We're going to go to this break and then come back and do more. But if you're on Facebook Live or want to get there now, if you get there in time, you can watch me eat a banana during the break. That's going to happen next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
God forbid this is the first time you've heard this show in any way whatsoever.
We're sorry.
God forbid that's the case.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Woo! In case you somehow missed that over on Facebook Live, you can fast forward later on to about the hour in mark, and you can watch me eat a banana. Real thing that happened. Some behind-the-scenes extra video content. I love what we're doing with the Facebook Live thing. I think it's just fun. And unique or whatever. But we need some more behind-the-scenes special event content, and that's what you can grow to expect and love. Beard said he has to go to the other studio to cut some audio that I need this segment. He just told me not to curse. So, bleep you, Beards.
Thank you.
Beard just broke into the studio and yelled thank you into a microphone that wasn't on. I don't know if you heard that or not. A couple things from these hot Twitter mentions, these hot Twitter streets. Ty DeClaire tweeted in and said, it's sad that you have to explicitly say that you want Alex Smith to be good. I thought that was implied. And it is implied. I thought it was implied also. I am
admittedly, very openly, and obviously a Chiefs fan doing this radio show. 0% of me has ever been devoted to trying to hide that. But, again, up in these mentions, you gotta clarify. You gotta clarify what you want to happen versus what is actually happening. I just want to learn. I just want to have good, informed opinions. I want to look at things smartly. That's all. It's just real spicy in here. The real thing I wanted to discuss, I can't discuss until Beards gets back with the audio. We can talk about opposing quarterbacks at Arrowhead really quick. Kirk Cousins coming to town for Monday Night Football. The last three road quarterbacks at night at Arrowhead, Ben Roethlisberger, gag. Freaking Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger at Arrowhead at night threw for only 224 yards, no touchdowns, and an interception. Not a good performance. Trevor Siemian, 183 yards, no touchdowns, one interception. Derek Carr, 117 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. It is a hard place to win, and those are decent quarterbacks. Those are good, decent to good quarterbacks. Trevor Siemian's an okay quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger's a very good quarterback. Derek Carr's a very good quarterback. But the Chiefs create a very, very difficult environment for opposing quarterbacks at home, and I think you genuinely can give some of that to Arrowhead and to the fans that are out there making noise. I'm a little bit worried about how Kirk Cousins is going to do this because, as we talked about earlier this week, especially against the Raiders, Kirk Cousins pulled in like over 100 yards of his passing yardage on screen passes, according to Kean Fahey. And I think Washington is going to be doing a good portion of their offense in a similar way against the Chiefs. If Justin Houston is trying to get to Kirk Cousins, they're going to be throwing screen passes. It's what they're doing to get away from Khalil Mack. I think they're going to do a very, very similar thing this week. They're going to treat Justin Houston in a similar way. Now, the difference comes in how do the Chiefs defend screen passes. I think you're going to see a very healthy dose of Daniel Sorensen, maybe a little more Daniel Sorensen than Eric Murray this week as they try to, you know, mix together to replace Eric Berry. You're going to see a lot of Daniel Sorensen as a guy who's there to kind of be the almost like the wedge buster for these screens, a guy who has a chance to sneak in and make things a little bit hectic. Now, they're going to be setting up in some instances where it looks like they're going to be going back to their bread and butter in that screen game. And it's going to go elsewhere. Terrell Pryor is a very good wide receiver who often beats defenses deep. So the Chiefs are going to have their hands full there. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see some screen passes set up to somebody else. Terrell Pryor on the other side and trying to beat Terrence Mitchell. But I think the Chiefs secondary is in pretty good shape here. Kirk Cousins has a deep arm, but he also very often will play a game like Alex Smith does. So it's something to keep in mind as we look ahead to Monday night. I want to pivot over real quick. We won't spend a ton of time here today, but a little bit would be good. Doug Baldwin and Doug Baldwin and Michael Bennett, Seattle Seahawks teammates, were on CNN with Anderson Cooper was hosting a town hall discussion. And Anderson Cooper asked a couple of questions to Doug Baldwin. He sort of defers, I guess, the deference from Bennett on this question. But immediately, Doug Baldwin goes back to a few other things he'd taken note of in this conversation previously. He goes back to some historical things, and he draws some connections to what's happening now, being spearheaded by NFL players. And I just thought this was worth sharing.
First and foremost, I want to go back to something that the Reverend said earlier. He said that the Boston Tea Party got this kicked off. I'm sorry, sir, you're incorrect. It was the Boston Massacre that happened 3 years prior to that when nine British police officers, armed police officers, gunned down some unarmed Americans. That's where this got kicked off. And I think that's ironic that we're talking about this topic tonight. You asked me, Hines Ward, you want to see players doing something on Tuesday? I would invite you to come to Seattle and see what we have done every Tuesday on our off day last year since this conversation has been talked about. And you asked me, Anderson Cooper, what can be done? What's the next steps? Well, we've been saying what the next steps are for a very long time. For me and for my teammates, I don't speak for all of us, but for our message that we've been trying to get across, number one, we want more resources for our law enforcement so that they can experience better de-escalation tactics, better policies, better protocols, so that issues and situations like Tamir Rice don't happen. I was a young man once, 12 years old, playing around in my neighborhood, playing cops and robbers, and I had toy guns, and I can only imagine what it would be like if I had a friend that got shot and killed in those situations. Number two, I know that the rebuttal is going to be about you should handle yourself accordingly when you interact with law enforcement. Well, let's put the DARE program back into schools. Let's start funding more education programs. Let's start putting more resources in our public school system in general.
It's Doug Baldwin, Seattle Seahawks wide receiver. I think there are some that message as a whole is so important right now. Because that's one of the most kind of, I guess at this point you could say, overplayed responses that I hear. Think, oh, what good is it to take a knee during the national anthem? Go do something. Go make your community better. Go to underprivileged communities. Go work with police. Go do something about it. And usually if you would just be quiet for a second and listen to what these guys are doing, you would realize how silly you sound asking that question or making those demands. Tuesday is their off day in the NFL generally. So in Seattle, they're going out and running these programs, in some cases starting these programs. Colin Kaepernick donated $900,000 of his own money to a bunch of different programs, got another $100,000 pledged that'll come later. These guys are donating their time and their money and their efforts. They're calling for different and new things. They're saying, hey, let's get better de-escalation tactics out there for police. Let's get better resources in the hands of these police training systems where they can come out of on the other side and say, oh, listen, look at this. I'm not going to be needlessly afraid that I'm going to shoot a man in his car while he's reaching for his wallet after I've asked for his wallet because I think he's reaching for a gun. That doesn't have to happen. That doesn't have to go like that. They're not, these aren't guys who are just looking for an excuse to protest something. These aren't guys who are doing and saying one thing and then not acting it out. This all gets intertwined. And I hear so many people returning fire of, you hear someone say, we need to work on our racial justice system in this country and in our law enforcement justice system in this country. We need to do better at these things. I so often see people returning fire at, well, what have you done about it, huh? What have you done? Go stop complaining and go do something. Open your eyes a little bit. Open your ears a little. Listen to this. These are involved guys in their communities. I genuinely don't know. I don't know what else you want. And it's really frustrating right now as all these stories come out. We talked about the Broncos story, and John Elway said, get your politics out of my sports, even though he used his personal letterhead with the Broncos logo on it to endorse Neil Gorsuch for Supreme Court justice. And now the Drew Brees said that the team is going to kneel before the anthem on Sunday and then stand up for the anthem in Wembley Stadium, by the way, in London. And there's this, I saw a story briefly earlier today. It said some bars and restaurants are refusing to show NFL games because of national anthem protests. Literally closing their doors for a thing that doesn't exist. Not one person in the NFL has ever said they're protesting the national anthem. Again, it's a platform thing. And if you're bothered by the platform of it, that's on you. Try to understand. Try to put yourself in their shoes. And I know a lot of people are looking at this from a different perspective, saying, hey, get yourself in my shoes. I have family that was in the military. I have, for whatever reason, some connection that makes me especially connected to the military and the sacrifices that soldiers make all the time. I get that also. But if somebody, Terrence Knighton who mentioned this, said, what if you were out there and somebody took a knee during the anthem because they wanted to bring attention to how many homeless veterans are in this country, how many people served and then got nothing when they came back and now are dealing with PTSD and not having a stable source of income, living on the streets, literally on the streets. What if that was the cause? And I know there's sort of like a human problem we have with being able to put ourselves in somebody else's shoes and trying to understand the struggles that someone else goes through. But I don't think it's that hard if you actually try. Like, if you actually want to understand someone else's perspective, I think you can do it. I think you'll be able to sort of walk yourself through that and say, oh, I that makes sense. At the very least, and this still isn't about free speech, and this and the thing that the Saints are doing makes me roll my eyes, because it becomes this place to show unity among the locker room. Whatever, if that is fake, obviously, there are tons of divisions in locker rooms. And they say, oh, we're going to use this time now to show how together we are. Is that not just as much of a problem to people? So now the national anthem is being hijacked by teams wanting to show how together they are, how tightly they're bound together. Please, come on. And that was never what this was about anyway. It was never about this bland, flavorless unity. It was never about the president. And it was never about football. It was never about the military. It was never about the flag. It was never about the national anthem. Again, I think some of the first things that Kaepernick ever said about it was, I don't think I can stand for the anthem of a country that systematically oppresses black people and then has police officers get let off after they go to court. It was never about the military in any way whatsoever. And everybody has problems with the country. Everybody. I mean, I've seen lots of people on Twitter that some of the usually, and this is a stereotype, but it's the most recent thing I've even seen. You've got people in Donald Trump T-shirts complaining about the NFL and the protests and the idea that racial injustice in this country isn't a big issue. Because if Hillary Clinton was the president, you'd be complaining about the country in a different way. You know, everybody has stuff like that. Everybody has things that they're not happy with. That's okay. That's kind of just how it works. We generally end up here somewhere, one way or another. But I think if you can devote a little bit of empathy, if you can put yourself in somebody else's perspective just a little more often, I think it makes sense. And also, and the place where I have a problem now with how we're talking about it is where you're going to get confused as to who I'm sounding like, I think. I do have a problem with how the media discusses this right now. And the media as a large entity doesn't exist. The media is made up of lots of smaller things being put into this larger entity that is the mainstream media. When the mainstream media is made up of newspapers in every major TV station, and all those TV stations are made up of smaller stations, and all of those smaller stations are made up of individual people, and that goes all the way down. There is no mainstream media. It's not a real thing, but regardless, it's all made up of lots of individuals that all have their own experiences and biases and perspectives and everything. But with the way that the majority, or not even the majority, but just where lots of people talk about this and say the national anthem protests, you're doing everyone a disservice. You're doing the people around you a disservice. You're doing a disservice to the people who don't look at other sources. You're doing a disservice to the people who are trying to learn and understand this issue better. You're doing a disservice to every level of the cause. If you call it a national anthem protest, you're doing a disservice to the people that are saying we have to examine the way we bring justice to our law enforcement and also deliver justice from our law enforcement. And you're doing a disservice to people who want the utmost possible respect to the military. I think those are all, by the way, noble causes. And I'm not even willing to start debating which one is the most noble, because I don't think that's a necessary conversation to have. But if you make it about national anthem protests, you're not only talking about it wrong and reporting it wrong, you're doing a disservice to everybody who's trying to have that conversation with the actual correct language. And it bothers me so much. And these ideas that this is all about unity, team unity, is continually entirely laughable and horrifically wrong.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Bill Self has had his eye on Steve Mikhailiuk since he was 7.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Which, when you say it that way, doesn't sound great.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Yeah. Welcome back. It's Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. We'll do a little bit of getting to know your opponent here as we do some really early pregame. Because I'm going to be on the air for like 6-8 more hours before the game ever actually happens. 6 more hours, yeah. 6 hours after today of Chiefs pregame, essentially. Because, in case you missed it earlier, I'm going to be on lots of radio lots of times. Tomorrow, Saturday, from noon to 1, I'll be live from Lawrence talking about KU basketball and late night at the Fog. Then on Sunday from 9 to 11 a.m. over on Sports Radio 810. All this is on 810. Over on Sports Radio 810 from 9 to 11 a.m. I'll be doing Sports Sunday on Sunday, doing lots and lots of Chiefs talk. And then from 4 to 6 a.m. on Monday, yes, 4 to 6 a.m. before the Border Patrol begins on Monday, I'll be doing the earliest Chiefs pregame show that has ever existed, ever. That's very exciting. Also, Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m., I'll be out at Pega's. Family restaurant, American cuisine, comfort, just a spoonful away. All that's all Pega's stuff. The Pega's out at Shawnee Mission Parkway and Antioch from 4 to 6 p.m. The showtime, I'll be out there, not just having an early dinner, but doing the show. We're going to be doing a live remote out there on Wednesday. That's at 8701 Shawnee Mission Parkway in Merriam. Pega's is P-E-G-A-H-S. So come say hi. In any of those places, also be out in Lawrence from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tomorrow. And then also I'm going to be at late night. We're gonna jam out to Lil Yachty. A statement I've never said before, but I'm excited for. It's a busy weekend, busy week, lots of busyness going on. Take a look at what to expect from Washington on Monday. We talked a little bit about the pass rush that will be coming. Ryan Kerrigan is the name that you probably are most familiar with, and rightfully so. There's going to be a lot of pressure coming for Alex Smith. And as we've talked about over and over, as Alex Smith gets blitzed, he finds ways to complete the pass. But as he gets shoddier offensive line play, he gets more conservative. Beards, what are you smirking at?
Nothing.
I know you're not just happy.
Ouch.
I know that's not true.
Man, that hurts my soul.
You're not a happy person. This show doesn't make you happy. The NBA makes you happy. Maybe we'll talk about the NBA later as a little treat for you at the end, like a little carrot for you to chase at the end of the work week.
I was just wondering if you would call this a concern for the Chiefs.
Beards made this production. And he's been trying to
You started this, by the way.
Yeah, but this is supposed to be for after games. Not
oh,
before.
Is it for after? I thought you said it was for a pregame thing.
I don't know
how we're using this, so we can just not use it.
All right, listen. You just get it ready. Okay?
It's ready.
I figured as much. God dang it, Beards. I'm not terribly worried about Kirk Cousins. I'm not terribly worried about the rushing game. Chris Thompson has significantly fewer carries than Samaje Perine, but he actually has a few more yards on the year than Perine does. Rob Kelly also has over 100 yards, but it's 119, 116, and 108 for Chris Thompson, Samaje Perine, and Rob Kelly running the ball. You could call it a three-headed monster, but it's more like a three-headed, like, puppy, I guess. What is that thing called, the dog with several heads? This seems like something you would know, Beards.
Cerberus?
Is that it?
Yeah.
Don't say with a question mark. Like,
yeah, it's Cerberus.
Okay, cool. I figured you would know.
This old Greek ancient god thing.
Yeah, I figured that you would know it. It's one of those is a puppy. That's the Washington backfield.
Cute.
Just adorable. Listen, if I've said it once, I've said it 100 times. Man, Samaje Perine is just an adorable man. What the hell? What do you mean? Is it cute? God.
So I'm not
a little one.
I'm not particularly, the Washington backfield not so much, but actually a small three-headed dog would be adorable. Unless it's one of those like mutants, just like, oh, it's all deformed.
If it was like bloodthirsty vicious, that might also, you know, be a negative factor on its cuteness.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Cute from afar. We can all agree on that.
Don't talk about yourself like that.
Face for radio.
But so as we talked to Seth earlier, and he was saying that he has some concern about the Chiefs' run defense. I think that's fair, especially whenever Dee Ford's out there, and there's just lots of problems. And the defensive line has been very, very good, but I do have my concerns about the run defense as well. I think it's just average, which is okay for something to be average on your defense. But I'm not terribly concerned about Washington. I don't think they're really going to be able to get the ball going too efficiently with any of those three guys. We mentioned Terrell Pryor earlier on. Chris Thompson, the running back, also actually leads the team in receiving. He has 13 receptions on the year. Jamison Crowder also has 13. Terrell Pryor has 10. Jordan Reed, the tight end, has 11. That'll be a place where the Chiefs get challenged. Jordan Reed will be running a little more freely in the absence of Eric Berry than he would be if Berry was still around. Something else to keep an eye on. Chris Thompson being one of those kind of dual threat running backs is kind of interesting, but I think this defense is pretty well equipped to handle it. I've said for a while that I think Kirk Cousins is just sort of like the more evolved Alex Smith. I think that he's going to do a lot of Alex Smith-like things. He'll try to find Terrell Pryor deep. Terrell Pryor is good for a couple of good long deep routes, but his longest reception in the year so far is 28. Chris Thompson has the two biggest plays of the year for Washington, a 61-yard run and a 74-yard reception. I'm guessing both of those are for touchdowns. I don't actually know that, though. And I also don't know if that was a deep shot or out of the backfield. I'm assuming it's out of the backfield because he's a running back. Anyway, I think that Kirk Cousins is going to be pretty confident to play a pretty short game. He has more of an arm than Alex Smith does. He has a few things in his game that would make me more optimistic, but I also wouldn't want to pay him the $25 or $26 million per year that he's going to make this next offseason. He's currently under his second year of the franchise tag. So I'm not shaking in my boots based off this offense, but if I had to come up with a chief concern, I could probably do it.
Chief concern. Pew, 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 pew.
My chief concern in this game is Ryan Kerrigan. The Raiders and the entire Washington pass rush. Last week, it made Oakland look like a very, very average offensive line and a not good offense. It shook Derek Carr. It shook that offensive line. That whole offense looked worse. Marshawn Lynch even all looked worse last week in the face of this Washington pass rush. I'm a little bit nervous. In fact, I am chiefly concerned with the Chiefs offensive line matching up with the Washington pass rush in this game. In fact, also, with Eric Fisher not practicing this week, that gives me a whole other thing that I have some pause about. If you're going to find a place in this game to be worried, I think it's the Chiefs offensive line versus the Washington pass rush.
Chief concern. Pew, 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 pew.
Also, Preston Smith has 3 sacks on the year. Ryan Kerrigan, just 2.5. Preston Smith is another chief concern.
Chief concern.
Pew, 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 pew. Are you happy now, Beards?
I got more play than I was expecting. Sure.
Chief concern.
Pew, 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 pew. All around, though, I'm not terribly, terribly worried about this Washington team. They lost right out of the gate to the Eagles, only put up 17 points there. The Chiefs put up 27 on Philadelphia. I think the defense for Washington is a little bit worse. I think the offense is a little bit worse than what Kansas City's putting out there. It's really where I land on it. They looked really good against Oakland, but as Seth pointed out, Oakland's good for a couple of stinkers. They won in Los Angeles against the Rams. It's not an incredible feat. It's a decent team out there, I'm not willing to tear my heart out because of that game against a team that, you know, beat the Niners, I guess. That's nice. But so overall, I think the Chiefs win this game by about a touchdown. I think I've had 27-22 weeks in a row. Give it to me again! Washington scored 27 points in back-to-back weeks. I say they don't get the 27 points here. The Chiefs have scored 42, 27, and 24. I think they match back right up with that Philadelphia score. 27-20 for the third week in a row.